Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and it's a wonderful summer weekend across the country, and, well, you can spend an hour with us and become better informed about your health and about nutrition. 888-302-3684 is our number. We invite you to pose your questions. Come directly into the doctor's office and have a quick appointment with me. 888-302-3684. We've got some interesting stories to share with you this hour. And I'm going to start with kind of a bad news story, because up until now, it has been suggested that, quote, moderate alcohol consumption is good for you, that it is healthy, and that, for example, red wine is part of a healthy Mediterranean diet. Wine, after all, is rich in polyphenols, resveratrol. Alcohol itself may act as a bit of a blood thinner, thus reducing the risk of heart attacks, although studies do confirm that alcohol intake somewhat increases the risk of stroke. But nonetheless, it's been suggested that, have a little bit of alcohol to help your heart, right? You've probably heard that. Maybe you've visited your physician or your cardiologist, and they say, well, a little red wine is going to be good for your heart, and thus improve your likelihood of dying. So a new study came out this week, and it's very disappointing for those of you who embrace the idea that, quote, drinking responsibly is a good way to go. Responsible drinking has become a 21st century mantra for how most people view alcohol consumption. But a new report out of the World Health Organization's International Agency for Research on Cancer has some bad news, because, well, cancer has actually been recognized as a carcinogen since 1988. According to Jürgen Rehm, he's senior scientist at the Center for Addictions and Mental Health in Toronto, Ontario. He says, we've known for a long time that alcohol causes esophageal cancer, but the relationship with other tumors, such as breast cancer, has come to our attention only in the past 10 years. And so the new research suggests that there is a dose-dependent risk for cancer with alcohol consumption. Now, dose-dependent is synonymous with any type of poison. A little poison, slight risk. More poison, higher risk. Lots of a poison, very high risk. So the more alcohol that a person drinks, the higher the risk. There is a dose-response relationship between alcohol consumption and certain cancers. They have now definitively shown a causal link between alcohol consumption and cancers of the mouth, pharynx, larynx, esophagus, colon, and rectum, liver, and breast. And there's a significant relationship between alcohol consumption and pancreatic cancer. Moreover, links have been made between alcohol consumption and leukemia, multiple myeloma, cancers of the cervix, the vagina, and skin. But less studies show strong confirmation of those links. And for bladder, lung, and stomach cancers, the alcohol cancer link is conflicted, because some studies say yay and some studies say nay. So it's pretty clear that there is a link between drinking and cancer. So you might say, but I'm a light drinker. I have a cocktail every day. On weekends, I have a couple of glasses of wine. Surely that is not applicable to me, because we know that, for example, heavy smoker drinkers, sometimes smoking as part of that alcoholic lifestyle, they have a much higher risk of cancer. But surely light drinking doesn't cause or contribute to cancer, or does it? Well, it turns out that in a meta-analysis of 222 studies looking at light drinkers versus non-drinkers, light drinking was still associated with a risk for oral cancer, esophageal cancer, and breast cancer in women. So, yeah, there you have it. Alcohol ultimately can be irritative. It can be a toxin. It can alter the hormonal balance in women, thus increasing their risk for breast cancer. And, you know, it's a risk-benefit equation. Alcohol is can be part of a healthy lifestyle when consumed in moderation. One can reduce the risk of cardiovascular disease to some extent with alcohol, but it is now clear that that may at least in part be offset by increasing risk of certain types of cancer. So bad news as you head for the patio this weekend with your glass of whatever. Those, unfortunately, are the medical facts. 888-302-3684 is our number. And here's a new one. You know, they say that sitting is the new smoking. They've coined a term. Sitting is the new smoking because sitting has been associated with a higher risk of death. Well, it turns out that working may be the new smoking, according to a new study. Working in a white-collar job in an office could increase your risk of a premature death by 60%. Okay, so maybe you should reconsider going back to work on Monday. Office workers are at higher risk of death precisely because they sit in front of computers for 8 hours a day. According to a new study, office workers must exercise for 1 hour a day to offset the deadly risk of the modern workspace. This according to a major study in the Lancet Medical Journal. Research on more than 1 million adults found that sitting for at least 8 hours a day could increase the risk of premature death by up to 60%. And so does that mean we all have to retire? Well, not exactly. You can offset the risk. The lead scientist on this report from Cambridge University said, quote, "We found that at least 1 hour of physical activity per day, for example, brisk walking or cycling, eliminates the association between sitting time and death. That might consist of a decent walk at a speed of just over 3 miles an hour. Brisk walk, not just a leisurely stroll or window shopping. You don't need to do sport, according to Dr. Eklund. You don't need to go to the gym. It's okay doing some brisk walking maybe in the morning, during your lunchtime, after dinner, in the evening. Or you could split it up over the day, but you need to do at least 1 hour because typically the modern lifestyle of spending a day in front of a computer at the office is accompanied by an evening slumped in front of a TV, and that can prove fatal. So mix it up. We all have to earn a living. I sit for prolonged periods of time talking to patients up to 8 hours a day or more, 4 or 5 days a week. Some of the time I spend writing, but that's usually in a sitting position. But exercise can offset the potential harm of these sedentary lifestyles. 888-302-3684. We invite your questions. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
As consumers in the 21st century, we are truly fortunate to have an abundance of choices in our daily lives. But when it comes to digestive health, there should only be one choice. Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics, easily recognizable in the bright green box on your retailer's shelf. Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics stands out among all others. Never freeze-dried, but always live and viable due to a unique 3-year fermentation process, award-winning Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics provides the restorative balance needed to support your own exclusive probiotic fingerprint. And that is very important, as no two of us are alike. With over 30 years of research, Dr. O'Hara's probiotics takes digestive and wellness support to a whole new level. So look for the bright green box on your retailer shelf today. Dr. O'Hara's probiotics are available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine health food stores nationwide. Discover the Dr. O'Hara difference.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you, and you can call us at 888-302-3684. Some of our listeners are exercising that prerogative, including Florence from South Brunswick, New Jersey. How you doing, Florence? Hello, Florence. Are you there, Florence? All right. Let us try. Oh, Florence, hi. How are you?
Hi. About a year ago, I had an ECG, and although I am in normal sinus rhythm, it indicated I have right bundle branch block and left anterior fascicular block. So I've been under the care of an electrophysiologist, and everything has been stable, and he's assured me that it's nothing, you know, of concern at this point. Mm-hmm. Just wanted to know if there's anything I can do in terms of supplementation.
So let's explain what's going on with Florence. The heart has these conduction pathways, like electrical wiring, but it's not really wiring. It's, you know, nerve pathways that old wiring in a car or in a house, you know, after literally millions and millions of beats and years of work, these pathways sometimes degrade. They're not, you know, it's not a short circuit. It's not a power outage. But what happens is there's some changes in the way that electrical signals are promulgated through the heart. And this can sometimes be a precursor to something more serious like atrial fibrillation or the types of heart arrhythmias. But it's a very common to see this in people over the ages 60 or 65, and doesn't necessarily portend the need for a pacemaker. I mean, that can sometimes happen if the pathways further deteriorate. The heart may speed up unaccountably, or it may slow down, and that can result in the need for a pacemaker to literally provide that electrical impulse to normalize the heart rate. So what can you do? Is there a supplement or is there a regimen that helps that? Well, anything that helps the heart is going to, you know, help this. So consider things like coenzyme Q10. Consider magnesium, which has an anti-arrhythmic effect. Consider fish oil, which also has an anti-arrhythmic effect, normalizing heart rhythm and potentially helping electrical conduction in the heart. The membranes around the nerves that conduct electrical impulses throughout the body, in the brain, in the spinal cord, and in the heart, these membranes rely on the healthy fats that you consume. So taking omega-3 fatty acids with EPA and DHA can help. Phosphatidylcholine is also a building block for healthy nerves. So these are some of the supplements that you can take. But, you know, I would agree with your doctor that, you know, this is just something to watch. And eventually there could be a problem, but it's an easily remediable problem. Worst case scenario, at the age of 85 or so, you might need a pacemaker. And that's a real common intervention. And people live, healthy and active lives with the pacemaker in place, if that should actually have to happen. 888-302-3684. Let's move on to Irene from Redford, Michigan. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. Thanks for taking my call. I've had rosacea problems since I was in my late 30s, so I've been using a Metro cream, I believe it's called.
Metronidazole. You know, it's interesting because that's the medicine that's used there in a topical cream that you apply mm-hmm. to the skin is the very same medicine that people take sometimes for parasite infections. It's called Flagyl. So what you're taking is metronidazole, which is also antibacterial to the extent that there's a bacterial infection there. Does it work? Does it help at all?
It's kept the redness to more like a light blush color looking, and that's why I've been using it, so it doesn't get worse. But I was, you know, since it's an antibiotic cream, you know, I started thinking, well, after I've had it for almost 25 years of using it, I just wondered if it was doing something else to me down the line because I've used it for so long.
Well, okay, so let's talk rosacea. Rosacea is a mixed bag. You know, just to call it a skin infection and apply an antibiotic is sort of an incomplete way of treating it. I mean, yes, there is a potential for little pimples or little whiteheads to form when you have rosacea, which is it's a rash around the cheeks and can make you look like you have a rosy red blush. But it's more than just applying a little blush to your cheeks. It can look very red and inflamed. And sometimes it can evolve the nose, and that's can give you a big red clown nose. The way to treat it is also sometimes with diet change, because there's an impact of food intolerances. Go ahead. What are you saying? Go ahead.
I was just concerned about taking, this Metro cream for so many years that I have been taking it.
Well, so if you're concerned about the effects, if you're concerned about the effects, you can take a probiotic. But, other things that are helpful, you can take omega-3 fatty acids, which have a nice anti-inflammatory effect. You can also take GLA. GLA is a different type of oil, which has anti-inflammatory effects in conditions like eczema and rosacea. You have to avoid highly spicy foods, alcohol. There's a rosacea diet. Even in some cases, patients are intolerant to garlic, so you got to be careful about that because it vasodilates. It opens the blood vessels and creates more of a problem and redness. Thanks for calling. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, 888-302-3684, as we continue our weekend edition of Intelligent Medicine.
At Wakanaga of America, we have dedicated the past 44 years proudly producing Kyolic, the world's most scientifically researched, best-selling, and odorless aged garlic extract. We begin with 100% organically grown garlic from our farms in California for maximum purity. We age our garlic to perfection in a unique 20-month extraction process to eliminate odor and create beneficial compounds found only in Kyolic. Aged garlic extract has been researched in more than 750 published scientific studies at major universities such as Brown, Cornell, and UCLA. Studies have focused on cholesterol, high blood pressure, immune stimulation, and all major cardiovascular risk factors. This is the Kyolic difference. So when you're looking for a supplement for great cardiovascular support, reach for the number one best-selling and odorless aged garlic extract, Kyolic. Please visit our website at kyolic.com. Kyolic aged garlic extract is available at fine health food stores everywhere.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. And this is a very, very important study that I'll share with you before we get back to calls. Headline, no significant difference found between glucose-lowering drugs for risk of death. You know, doctors have a choice of several dozen diabetes medications. We're not talking about insulin here. We're talking about medications for type 2 non-insulin dependent diabetes, people with high blood sugar, but they don't yet require insulin. There's no question that people who have insulin dependent diabetes really need insulin, and that insulin can stave off terrible complications of diabetes and stave off death. That is an established fact and a true medical breakthrough, which occurred in the early 1920s and has been with us for nearly a century. It's a mainstay of treatment for type 1 diabetes. But when it comes to type 2 diabetes, we've got a whole raft of medications, and doctors apply them very aggressively. And a new study suggests that among nearly 120,000 adults with type 2 diabetes, there was no difference between any of the 9 available classes of glucose-lowering drugs, either alone or in combination, and the risk of death. In addition, and we think of this as one of the main reasons to use diabetes medications, because often people don't die of diabetes, but they do die of heart disease that is related to their diabetes. So you'd think, okay, lower blood sugar, and thus you will reduce the risk of cardiovascular death. According to the study of 120,000 adults with type 2 diabetes, there was zero reduction in the risk of cardiovascular death. So what are we doing here? What we are lowering people's blood sugar, and we're getting better numbers on tests, but billions of dollars of research and decades of investigation into new drugs, resulting in multiple drug classes, all kinds of different medications, has resulted in no advantage in terms of the true endpoint, which is whether you're going to live or die taking these medications. So what am I suggesting here is that diabetes really boils down to a lifestyle approach, dieting, exercise, improving sleep, taking the right supplements, and that the medications, while seeming to lower blood sugar or lower hemoglobin A1C, ultimately don't have that significant an impact. This is just an astonishing new study, but the implications probably won't be making a big splash when it comes to your next appointment at the doctor's office as the doctor continues to administer a blood sugar lowering medication. And our goal, what has been for nearly three decades now at the Hoffman Center, and I share this with the vast majority of my integrative medicine colleagues, is to get people off these medications through proper lifestyle intervention. Diabetes accounts for 1.5 million deaths per year, with blindness, limb amputation, kidney failure, and cardiovascular death. And it afflicts 47 million people as of the latest statistics. And there's a lot of people who may have undiagnosed diabetes. And it turns out that, according to the study, the medications being used for treatment of this condition, virtually worthless when it comes to prolonging life. So it's a very stark statistic. Let's talk to Jean in Long Island. Welcome.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Hoffman, for taking my call. I have osteoporosis, and it was recommended by the rheumatologist that I take the Prolia injections. Mm-hmm. And after looking at the side effects, I just wasn't interested in doing that, so I went to another rheumatologist, and I told him I didn't want to take the Prolia, and he suggested the Fosteum Plus. Now, I'm wondering if that Fosteum Plus is effective and if it's safe, because I've heard of a connection with breast cancer and Fosteum Plus.
Fosteum Plus, it's a supplement, or what is that?
Well, it's a supplement, and then it contains genistein.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay, yeah. I was thinking it was a medication. Fosteum, it's a supplement. Okay, so, looking it up here through the miracle of the internet, Fosteum Plus, the purity of genistein with the strength of calcium. So what this basically is something that they pitch to conventional doctors. They, look, obviously he sees he's got a problem with you. You're a non-compliant patient. You're balking at the medical prescription. And it's interesting that they chose Prolia with you. Prolia is a powerful new drug. It's expensive. It has to be injected. Do you have very severe or profound osteoporosis, or is it just a little bit of bone loss?
3.2 was the number.
See, that's
after
not
my bone density test.
That's not really horrible.
And it isn't.
You could take the Fosteum. The Fosteum contains genistein, and genistein's a little controversial because it might be estrogenic. So maybe in a woman with breast cancer or high risk of breast cancer, we might suggest that, you not take that. But genistein is not
my mother had breast cancer.
Well, there you go. I mean, there's a concern there, too. So
yeah.
Genistein is not that powerful a treatment for osteoporosis. There's the estrogenic effect of soy may strengthen bone a little bit. Then you get a little calcium, but it's not a big deal. And this doesn't, I look at the website, this is heavily marketed to mainstream doctors, but it really, it's more to treat menopause symptoms and not to build bone. It maybe could help a little bit with hot flashes, but it's not going to build bone. So, you know, we've talked about this frequently on this program.
Yeah.
The single strongest thing for osteoporosis reversal, not just prevention, because you can prevent it with taking vitamin D, adequate amounts, and, you know, calcium with magnesium and boron and lysine and ipraflavone. You know, these are all present in a supplement that I use called Osteopreve. But that's just going to slow the progression. It's not going to reverse it. It's not going to strengthen bone. What you can use to strengthen bone and reverse the osteoporosis is strontium. Yeah, strontium's used in Europe. It usually comes as 340 milligram capsules. You take two at bedtime. And you do this, you know, for a year, 2 years, 3 years, and you repeat your bone density. And I think your doctor's going to lay off suggesting that you take a powerful med like Prolia, because you'll see improvements. The other thing that can be helpful, vitamin K. Unless you're on a blood thinner, it's perfectly fine to take vitamin K. And certain blood thinners, it's still okay to take vitamin K. The only one that's a problem is Coumadin. Vitamin K2 also helps to slow osteoporosis, but the single strongest thing is strontium. For patients who don't respond fully to strontium, we also prescribe bone morphogenetic protein, or BMP. And the brand name of that product is Ostinol. That also has bone-enhancing effects. But the thing that really hits it out of the park for osteoporosis is strontium. And it's, in my estimation, a lot safer than the conventional drugs, the oral medications that can cause esophageal problems, even slightly increase the risk for esophageal cancer, that can build bone, but sometimes ultimately build bone that's brittle and that fractures.
Yes.
Those are the bisphosphonates, the Actinol, and the Boniva, and the Fosamax. And the reclast injections, I mean, yeah, they'll strengthen bone, but, you know, maybe at a cost. And strontium is a benign intervention. It really should be utilized more. And, you know, a lot of people that I haven't even seen, you know, many patients in my practice, of course, I've seen improvements. But, I get calls and emails routinely from people who said, I followed your advice, I took the strontium, my bone density improved dramatically, and my doctor's no longer saying I need medication. So there you have it. All right.
You say 3.2 on my bone density test is not horrible. Osteoporosis.
No, it's not horrible, but it needs
attention.
Yeah, because you sound rather young, and you know what'll happen is.
No, I'm 75.
That's young because you have very high likelihood of living to 90 or more. In the next 10 or 15 years, you could dip way down and then be at risk for fracture. So you really need to do something. Sometimes if I hear a 3.2 in a 90-year-old, I say, well, that's normal. But a 75-year-old, 75 these days is relatively young.
No, I want to do something about this.
The way that women live these days, I mean, it's incredible. You know, there's people who are nonagenarians and centenarians, and you want to prevent a fracture because that can be devastating.
Yes.
All right. Give it a shot. And call us back in a year or two. All right. That's what I'm suggesting. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
At Nordic Naturals, we know that a commitment to deliver the world's safest, most effective omega oils requires an exceptional process. That's why we manage every step of production, from boat to bottle. That includes sustainably sourcing wild-caught fish from well-managed fisheries. It means using state-of-the-art equipment and technology at our manufacturing plant in Arctic Norway. Nordic Naturals bottles and encapsulates our omega-3s at our own facility and carefully ships products from our eco-friendly headquarters in California. The result? Nordic Naturals products have received more than 40 awards for taste, innovation, and product excellence. You can trust the quality of Nordic Naturals products and know you're getting all the health benefits omega-3 fish oils offer. Nordic Naturals' high-quality, great-tasting omega-3s make staying healthy easier for you and your family. When choosing an omega-3 fish oil product, choose the number one fish oil in the U.S. Choose Nordic Naturals. Available at natural product retailers or online at nordicnaturals.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. You may have heard of leaky gut syndrome. Leaky gut syndrome means that when the gap junctions in your intestinal tract are not functioning properly, the contents of your digestive tract leak. into your systemic circulation, causing mischief. Well, there's another condition which might be called leaky brain syndrome. There is a blood-brain barrier that protects your brain from the adverse effects of things present in your circulatory system. So to the extent you may have harmful allergens in your bloodstream, or you may have toxic lead or mercury or chemicals, your blood-brain barrier protects your brain from inflammation or damage. And so it is that researchers tested the proposition that resveratrol could help restore the integrity of the blood-brain barrier in Alzheimer's patients. Previous research has shown that destruction of the blood-brain barrier might hasten the progression of Alzheimer's disease. So researchers at Georgetown University Medical Center gave resveratrol to Alzheimer's patients. And I posted this on Facebook, and some people asked, well, what was the dosage that was used? The dosage used at first was 500 milligrams twice daily, then 1,000 milligrams twice daily. And it was successful at restoring the integrity of the blood-brain barrier, thus reducing the ability of harmful immune molecules to travel from the body across the blood-brain barrier into brain tissues. And the net result was there was a reduction in inflammation of the brain cells, which slowed the cognitive decline of patients. This is great stuff, and it really suggests that resveratrol might be a useful treatment, or certainly a preventive treatment, in patients with early onset Alzheimer's or dementia. And more, this is just the beginning of research on the application of resveratrol to neurodegenerative disease. More and more research is going to be rolling out in the next few years. Charlotte in Kent, Connecticut. Welcome.
That's right.
How are you doing?
Hello, doctor. Doctor, I had this flesh behind the left knee, the cap, kneecap, mm-hmm. and my doctor told me, you know, he wanted me to get the test, and mm-hmm. I did, and he thought it was Baker's cyst at first.
Right. Right.
But it turned out to be a blood clot.
Okay.
Now, I'm taking, Xarelto.
Yep.
And what is that good? Or I hear so many bad things about it.
Well, okay, so here, when you have blood clots, uh-huh. I mean, look, so first of all, let's talk about the situation where you had pain behind the knee. Now, pain behind the knee can be, as you said, it can be a Baker's cyst. That's the most common cause of a swelling or pain behind the knee.
Right.
It's like a form of arthritis, except the mm-hmm. pain is not in the front of the knee, it's behind the knee. Can you just pot Charlotte down so that I can answer her question, okay? What happens in a Baker's cyst is you get like a fluid accumulation. That's essentially the nature of a cyst, and usually that responds to conservative treatments like, you know, heat treatments, you know, compresses, and it usually goes away. However, in your case, the doctor was, you know, smart and said, you know, maybe there's more to it than just a Baker's cyst, because let's say you just assumed it was a Baker's cyst and you didn't do anything about it. Well, there eventually a Doppler, which was probably the study that you underwent, showed that there was a blood clot there. And the blood clot, yeah, it can be painful, it can be red, but it can also travel upwards and ultimately go into your lungs, cause a pulmonary embolus, which can be, you know, very serious or even fatal. So, you know, what are they going to do about it? They have to thin your blood. They have, in the past, they could have put you on Coumadin. Coumadin is tricky because you got to keep measuring levels of the of the proton to see if either you have not thinned the blood sufficiently, or if you over thin the blood, you can get hemorrhage. So every couple of weeks, you got to get a blood test. The levels have to be adjusted. Sometimes this can be affected by the foods that you eat, too much in the way of green leafy vegetables or green tea, for example, which contain vitamin K, can actually diminish the activity of the Coumadin. So there's a whole new raft of drugs, including Xarelto, which operate in a different way. And they don't require frequent blood testing, and they don't require prohibition on dietary vitamin K, so that's an advantage. The disadvantage is, yes, there is a danger, and the danger is that should you have an accident or fall, you're anticoagulated, and that can result in severe bleeding. And some people, you know, come to harm because they fall on their heads, and what's usually just a minor bump on the head could be an intracranial hemorrhage. And that can be a real devastating event and even potentially fatal. So that's the really downside of these medications is that unlike Coumadin, which can easily be stopped with a dose of, you know, like an injection of vitamin K, it's sometimes hard to reverse these newer medications. They're coming up with new ways to reverse these medications should some people have an accident. But, you know, still there's a risk, but it's a risk-benefit equation. You know, you got a blood clot, and you want to prevent it from going to your lungs. And maybe in a few months or a year or so, that bump in the back of your knee will go away, and you'll be able to go off the blood thinner. You know, I wouldn't, you know, many holistic doctors I've heard, you know, sometimes I listen on the radio, I used to hear Dr. Atkins say, oh, don't take these blood thinners, just take, you know, take fish oil and take vitamin E, and you'll be fine. Well, we can't be sure that those will thin the blood adequately to prevent a pulmonary embolus. And yeah, they do thin the blood to some extent, but they're not going to do the trick completely. All right. In the concluding moments of the show, let's share this good news that recently, if you watch the Tour de France, I'm an inveterate watcher of the Tour de France. I find it fascinating. 150 to 200 miles per day for 2 weeks, climbing up the Pyrenees and the Alps. Incredible feats of endurance. There's no sport like it in terms of just gutting it out. Tremendous physical conditioning, determination, and endurance. The winner and the second place rider in the Tour de France did it with a low carb diet. Now that sounds really strange, because in the past we've suggested carbo-loading as a means of improving athletic performance. You know, bowls and bowls of spaghetti and tons of bread and sugary drinks. And you need to consume an enormous number of calories to ride 150 to 200 miles per day. But it turns out that you can do this with a low-carb approach. The trick is healthy fats and lots of them. You can fuel with fats. And winner Chris Froome of Great Britain was on an LCHF diet. That's a low carbohydrate, high fat diet. He's a very lean guy. And being light on the bike can really improve athletic performance. The runner-up, Romain Bardet, was also utilizing the low-carbohydrate, high-fat diet. So you fuel yourself, train in the morning after eating a protein-rich omelet, carbohydrate-dense bread, eat lots of fat, and turn yourself into a lean, mean, fat-burning machine for athletic performance. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Thanks for joining us. Check out our website at drhoffman.com.